So this was me and Jeff, and Dr. Yes is with us on podcast, and had an interesting discussion last week with Jeff. You related to me a situation that you were looking at with some of the athletes that you help, and kind of a question that was interesting that I thought worthy of us kind of discussing on a podcast. So if you would, just kind of repeat your scenario, lay that out, the questions that you had for me, and then we'll let Doc kind of tackle that stuff.
Sure. I have, I'm training two sisters right now, both tennis players, 3 years of age difference. And my question I was kind of trying to get some ideas and thoughts. The older sister, she's a bit bigger, taller girl, and she is physically more explosive and stronger than the younger sister, but she lacks a sense of elasticity. She doesn't bounce very well. So when doing multiple repeated jumps and skips and stuff like that, it's just very heavy-footed, and she just doesn't have a elasticity quality to her as compared to her younger sister, who is slightly shorter and doesn't have the strength of her older sister, but she frolics like a deer. I mean, she bounces, will do different types of leaping exercises and multiple repeated jumps, and she just springs off the ground. So my questions for Yosef, and I'll ask Doc, you know, would it be wise with the older sister to train her since she lacks the elasticity type qualities as compared to her sister, to do more multiple repeated type jumps, short coupling type jumps, or and then with the younger sister, would it be wise to do more long coupling, single effort jumps, or am I just, because they're both in high school, am I just overthinking and confusing the matter? I'd love to get your thoughts.
All right. First, we have to examine a couple of things, Jeff. I think it's a great question that many parents and coaches ask. You know, how do we train this person to be more, as you said, elastic, but I want to take the term elasticity to task for a moment. Elasticity by itself doesn't really mean too much. Everybody's got elasticity. All muscles have elasticity. And one muscle doesn't have more elasticity than another. It is kind of a misnomer. It's just like a rubber band. Well, sure, you have some rubber bands that might have more tension, and all that. All elasticity means, like if you stretch the rubber band, it's going to return to its original shape. It goes back again. This is what elasticity is. This is why we call it elastic. When you stretch it, it comes back again. So this is not the secret to what you described with your sisters. Here, it's not the elasticity of the muscle, even though we can say that, but I like to use a term called resiliency. Of the muscle tendon complex. See, this is where what we can consider explosive power, which is really what you were talking about with the sister who bounds like a deer and can really jump and leap, and you know, everything seems effortless to her. Well, this is an example of the muscle tendon working together, that once they get stretched, they quickly go back together again. They're very explosive in doing this. See, now this is a quality that can be trained. The ability of the muscle tendon complex. And notice we have to use both of these together, because most of the stretching that goes back into this effort when they take off and jump or leap is in the tendon, not in the muscle. In some cases, the muscle hardly changes any length. The changing of the length is typically in the tendon, but the two of them work hand in hand. So this becomes the key. How can we develop the ability of the muscle tendon complex to exhibit greater quickness and explosiveness once they're stretched and then contracting again? And this is really the whole basis for plyometrics. So the term elasticity doesn't mean anything. It's just confusing the issue and not really addressing what the real issue is. And the real issue is How do we develop the ability of the muscle tendon complex to react more resiliently and quickly and more explosively? Hey, let me stop there to see if that's making sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely, that makes sense. Love to then, in a practical setting, get your thoughts on how to practically apply that to the different scenarios.
Hey, well, see, now, to apply it, this is where we have to get into explosive training or plyometric training. This is plyometric training, which is more like the shock method or true explosive training, not merely plyometrics, which everybody has come to believe is simply a jump, any kind of a jump, all that's plyometric. But, you know, we can't go into too much detail here. We don't have enough for it. But I recommend everybody take a look at the book, Explosive Plyometrics. This book has all of the information they're going to need, as well as examples of how you can develop this ability to become quicker and faster, or more exhibit more of this resiliency, quickness, and explosiveness, not only of the arms, but the legs and midsection and total body. Each one can be trained individually. So it's not just jumps, but maybe a form of jumps. And I've developed the ability to do or use this. See, it's a stretch reflex that's involved here. The quicker and faster you can stretch the tendon, and the greater the tension that you can build up in the shortest amount of time, then the greater will be the return. And this is really the secret to explosive power. You take a look at a good jumper, for example. You don't see him go into a deep squat. Looks like they hardly even went down. So there's a little bit of knee bend, but a great explosive contraction going up. So this means that with a minimal range of motion, it can develop maximum tension in the muscle via the eccentric contraction, and then quickly switch it to the concentric contraction, and up they go. We can use this concept even with active cords. See, we can put the muscle on quick stretch under great tension and then quickly reverse it. Now we're going to develop explosive power in this particular action. Use this quite a bit with runners. Runners have to develop a very strong knee drive and paw back. Now, these can be developed with the active cord exercises, which you're not going to develop through simple jumping. That's how I came up with some of these concepts. Jumping is great if you're going to go vertical. Here, in running, we want most of our forces to be horizontal. So, how do we develop this ability to develop the horizontal explosive power? And that's where you can use other items like the active cords. Okay, how are we doing so far?
Good. Yeah. Now, I guess then my question would be, with that in a training program, with the two different, types of athletes, would you train them differently? Would you, apply more, of the resilient plyometric type exercises earlier on, maybe with the older sister, or vice versa, and then from a training plan point of view, would it vary?
It would vary, and here again, it really depends upon the sport. Is it really needed in all sports? And then how much of it is needed? See, now if it's a runner, I think it becomes, or let's say a sprinter, it becomes obvious. But if we're talking about a long-distance runner, does that runner need a tremendous amount of explosive training? I don't think so. You need some. Your top marathoners, they're not exactly slow. We still have that concept of slowness when somebody's running a marathon. If you look at a typical marathoner who does a 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 minute mile, yeah, they're very slow. But your elite marathoners are running sub-5 minute miles. They're fast. So they would need more explosiveness in order to become even faster. Not the 11-minute mile person. Unless you want it to become fast, then some of this becomes important. But even here, the type of jumps, or the type of explosive training is going to vary quite a bit. If they're not going to be that fast in their sport, you can get by with simple jumps. That'll be enough to develop the resiliency of the muscle tendon complex, so that they're going to be able to react a little quicker and a little bit more explosively. If we're talking about a sprinter, then we have to get into more of the shock method type explosiveness, where it has to be very powerful, exhibited over a very short period of time. So we have to differentiate not only the type of plyometrics, but for which athlete in which sport and for what purpose. But I kind of gave you an extreme there from a sprinter to a marathoner. If you're talking about a basketball player, see now here they need the quickness, so they need some of this horizontal explosive power. They need the vertical explosive power. They need more explosiveness of the arms. They have to have very quick arms, let's say, to steal a ball or to snatch a ball, whatever it might be. And they also need it for quickness in their running movements or cutting actions. So you can see how they need explosive power, not just of the total body, but for specific actions. So on the highest level, we have to differentiate the explosive power, or whether it be the arms in particular actions, or the legs in particular actions, or the entire body. Being sometimes, like for example, a shot putter, having more the entire body. They have to use the legs, use body rotation, and they use the arm. But we have these three components that we want to make a little bit more explosive. Might be confusing it by getting more complex, but you can see what's involved here.
Yes, sir.
So, with that being the case, can you just kind of give a quick backdrop as to what, you know, we're not affecting elasticity with the repetitive jumps, because I think this is one of the places where people thought this was the case, that elasticity was being affected with was performed like some shorter coupling exercises where the athlete's trying to exhibit springiness, like in the running or something like this. Can you tell what's actually going on within the musculature when you're doing these lighter jumps? What's happening, and then how does that affect, you know, the later training?
All right. See, the easier jumps or the long coupling, if I can use that term loosely. These are terms that came from Roshansky. I don't know if I like to use them all the time because it's kind of misleading. Short coupling, I hate to use it, but think in terms of how quickly does the action have to be executed. This becomes the key. If it doesn't have to be executed that quickly, like that marathon runner or the elite marathon runner, see, then they can get by with more of the easier jumps. And see, the easier jumps are also used as a prelude or a prerequisite to the more explosive jumps. So there's a progression in the training for explosive power. You don't just start off with the highest form of plyometrics, but you have to gradually expose the body to greater and greater intensity and less time. The greatest distinguishing factor is how quickly the action is executed. Faster it's executed, in general, higher and faster or further you're going to go. The longer it takes, then the slower you're going to be. So this is one way of looking at the two extremes. And that has answered the question.
Yeah. So we're not working on elasticity per se. Then, you know, that's not really the issue. What we are working on is the speed of contraction for the musculature. Is that correct?
Muscle tendon. To see, the muscle is really, relatively speaking, the less important component. The tendon is the more important component. But we should start talking more about stretching the tendons and having them come back, you know, to their original form, rather than the muscle. this is what we want to work on. That's why I like to use the term the muscle tendon complex, not just the muscle or just the tendon. The two of them are combined, and we can't differentiate one from the other. We can't just work on the muscle alone and expect to be more explosive, or the tendon alone and expect to be more explosive. We have to work on both simultaneously, which they will be, but we have to think in terms of both of them together as we go into the training.
So let me make sure that I'm understanding correctly. Then, with the muscle tendon complex, you're looking at the resiliency, like you mentioned earlier, and then the speed of the contraction with the muscle tendon complex. Could you give just a real quick explanation as when you go from the lighter jumps, longer coupling, shorter coupling, more intense jumps, like maybe single effort jumps, and then you graduate yourself to plyos. With muscle tendon complex, what changes being made from the lower level of the jumps on up to the plyo jumps? Just kind of in a sense of how does that whole complex undergo changes during this time period?
Okay, that's an excellent question. And the real rationale behind it, or the explanation, is that it's in the amount of stretching and the amount of tension built up during the stretching. So at the beginning, you take a look at a youngster or anyone else, you tell them to jump, and you see them go down into a pretty good squat, and then they leap up. Well, see, this is a lot of stretching, and they need this stretching to get more tension. But as they develop, they don't have to stretch as much. They stretch less, but then there's more tension built up in less stretching. Kind of a hard concept to appreciate, but the less you can stretch and the greater the tension that you can develop in this very short period of time, the more powerful the contraction is going to be, and the higher you're going to jump, the further you're going to go. So at the beginning, we work on just the ability to execute the switch from the eccentric to the concentric. Do you like Jeff, one of your sisters, the one who did not exhibit the explosive power? Now she should start off with some jumps and gradually increase the quickness of the jumps, trying to make them a little faster. But she's going to have to start off slowly. So you can say the long coupling. See, long coupling doesn't really mean too much. What we're really talking about is taking a long time for the muscle to stretch and then switch its contraction from the eccentric to the concentric. How long does that take? This is where the coupling, if you can use that term loosely, occurs. Well, it's not so much a coupling, it's more the switching that we want to work on. Switching the one contraction to the other. And more tension we can develop as we do this initial contraction. The greater the tension, then the more powerful will be the resultant switching. So, you know, the system would start off slowly, and then gradually you'll see the change. See, all of this can be developed because in the muscle is going to take more of the white fiber development. And this can be developed through the explosive or plyometric contraction. And as they develop this, then they can become more explosive. But you got to develop the fibers first. So most likely, if she can't, you know, if she doesn't exhibit this explosive power, it's because she has the strength but doesn't have the strength of the white fibers or the ability to use the white fibers in the switching from the eccentric to the concentric. We have a tendency to ignore eccentrics in our training, yet eccentrics are the key to explosive power. So I would also recommend with the sister, have her do more eccentric work. And as she's doing more of the eccentric exercises, work in the switching, like do a squat eccentrically. You're going down very slowly. When you hit in the bottom position, leap up. So you're bringing in that element of quickness, or as you're going down very slowly, quickly switch and come up. So you're working on that switching now. So all of this has to be developed, and the muscle, tendon, concept, or complex has to learn all of this. It's not just developed, and you have to learn this ability. When you do this type of work, the mind must be engaged. The more you can engage the brain to think of this or become cognizant of what's occurring, the faster can be the development. Well, this becomes very important.
So, with that being the case, Doc, could you also give a quick explanation as to why you're going to use these lower-level jumps that are absolutely necessary, especially as athletes younger, but even in the long term, in order to be able to do plyos and to use them, that you have to have, what's the rationale for they have in the background and the other jumps? Because as you mentioned earlier, a lot of people talk about plyos, you know, maybe online, and you'll see examples on YouTube that really aren't correct. They don't abide by the rules that Dr. Bereshansky laid out when he developed the idea of the shock method or plyometrics. So, I've heard you say this hundreds of times, that if you start out using plyos, you're going to get injured, that you're not going to get the development that you see other people maybe have gotten using plyos, because you can't neglect the earlier stages of jump training. Could you kind of explain that real quickly as to, you know, why is the athlete more prone to injury if they try to jump in right with plyos by neglecting the other lower level jumps?
It's all in preparation. We have to prepare everything for the actions that they're going to be developing. Now, it's just like in weight training. Do you start off with the heaviest weight on the very first day of weight training? Or do you start off with a light weight and gradually increase the weights as they get stronger? I think it's obvious. You're going to say, oh, yeah, we gradually increase the weights. Well, the same thing with explosive power. You have to gradually increase the intensity of the plyometric actions. You can't just start off doing depth jumps from a high height and not expect an injury. You need the preparation, and this is where the lighter, easier jumps come in. It's what we call lead-up or preparatory jumps prior to true plyometric jumps. Same thing with active cords. We start off developing slow strength, where you do the movement slowly, then you gradually pick it up, and now you're moving at a more moderate speed. Then you're getting a little faster. So each contraction is becoming more explosive and executed even faster. But in each case, we first have to develop this eccentric tension. Then we can switch the eccentric contraction to the concentric. And there's an example of your explosive power. All in preparation. We have to prepare for everything. Got to get the muscle tendon ready for this. Don't just do it. This is what causes injury.
So the two things to take away from this in terms of the plyometric idea is this. Number one, you can gain tremendous amounts of improvement and benefit from using the lower level jumps, especially the younger the athlete. But even someone who's never been exposed to that, you're going to get a tremendous amount of improvement by just using the lower level jumps. In fact, not only are the plyos dangerous for that, the person who has not, you know, done the preparation work, but you're really not going to get a result either. You're going to get a much better result, I can speak from experience, by using lower level jumps for extended periods of time. And you really don't want to even think about plyos until you develop this base on a real significant level. And like Doc has mentioned many times before, the athlete needs to be in his late teens, regardless of how many years he's been trained, but needs to be in his late teens before he started attempting this. So I think you need to understand that aspect first. And then secondly, plyometrics is an advanced training concept. So it's kind of like if you were to equate it to other methods, you know, maybe something like training up in the max intensity ranges. Those are advanced concepts. Plyos is an advanced concept. It was developed for the higher end athlete who was maybe slowing down in their development. Now this adds a new component and a new avenue of developing more explosiveness and power. So I think those are the two critical things to take away from that. You know, that you want to take this one step at a time and really take your time developing each step of the way, and you're going to get a maximum benefit, and you're not going to have injury. And then lastly, which I think is very critical, you do not leave a negative imprint in the nervous system, which could diminish returns in your training later on in the athlete's career, where you've kind of damaged things so that his overall potential now could have possibly been brought down by trying to use it as concepts that were too advanced. Would you say that's correct, correct assessment?
Yeah, and I, as I was listening to you, Joseph, I started having some mixed emotions, and mainly because of the use of the term plyometrics like this. Most people misuse the term plyometrics tremendously. This is why I think I'm getting away from its use so often and just call it more explosive training. That's what you're really trying to develop. You're trying to develop the explosive power or the ability of the muscle tendon complex to react more resiliently, to contract and switch the contraction to, you know, from the eccentric to the concentric. But where I think of this, when we think in terms of plyometrics, everybody's thinking of a certain thing in their mind, and it could be very wrong. You start thinking in terms of explosive power, maybe we can get a little bit more clarification and a good understanding of, you know, what plyometrics is. This is why I recommend the Explosive Plyo book, or even some of the other books like Explosive Running, where we go into a good explanation of what really true explosive training is. Give examples of exercises to develop the explosiveness, rather than thinking, okay, now's the time to do plyometrics. See, this by itself doesn't mean too much. And, you know, it's like it's getting to be another term that we have misused so often, has come to the point where we don't know what it means. And here's where the problem comes in.
So to kind of to bring this back from where we started, which was, you know, can you affect, you know, the athlete's elasticity through specific training, kind of gone through the whole rationale of that idea. Can you, does this kind of bring to mind that other ideas or concepts or even words that, you know, really seemed like they were really some sophisticated concept and in fact they weren't, or they really didn't, they didn't really mean anything, I guess I should say. They're total misnomers. Does this remind you of anything over the course of your whole career, other times where you've heard these concepts or lingo and kind of were thinking, well, you know, there's really nothing to this. There's no rationale behind this.
There are so many, Joseph. It's, yeah, that's really the key behind it. And I often wonder, what is it that makes so many people jump on the bandwagon? I use the term loosely here. When they hear a new term, like before elasticity, it was neuromuscular training or proprioceptive training. We do proprioceptive training. But you can't do a movement without the proprioceptors being involved. Otherwise, you're dead. So, but if you're alive and capable of moving, you have proprioceptors working all the time. How do you train them? No, you're not training the proprioceptors. As you do the movement, the proprioceptors are responding. It's just something that's in the body. You know, we glom onto these words like there's some magic formula to it. When plyometrics came out, and I introduced plyometrics in this country, so I know its beginnings and what went on. Right from the very beginning, there was a special TV program. We did a special on it, and here it was. They had all these aerobics people doing, oh, yeah, we're doing plyometrics. Look at this. And they had, I think it was Alan or a couple of professional athletes up there all jumping like crazy, you know, hey, we're doing plyometrics. See, it became a nice, fun kind of a thing. That's not what I brought out. But see, this is what they glom on to make it entertaining. And, you know, it just aggravates me no end. So everything is for entertainment rather than, hey, let's really educate the people on what really things are. So that's what I see on my bandwagon here. But we see too much of this. The elasticity, I mean, it's the most stupid thing going, really, because elasticity just means if you stretch it, it's going to come back again. How are you going to develop this ability? It's like take a rubber band and now make this rubber band more elastic. You know, it seems kind of silly, isn't it? This is exactly what they're saying when it comes to the muscle. If we're going to make the muscles more elastic. But you keep practicing with that rubber band, and if you're successful, then you're going to be successful with that muscle too. There are many more examples like this, and I don't know what the answer is, and I go back to the academicians. Where are they? Why don't they speak up? They're supposed to be the guiding light. They're supposed to be educating people. They're not doing it. So we have a big problem, which I don't want to get into now, but we're not educating people in terms of what they should be doing. It's especially true for many coaches who are working with our athletes.
Yeah, I agree, Doc. I think that a lot of times we'll get off subject or off topic, and which is, you know, stuff that we've talked about before. How do you improve the actual athlete's performance through the concepts that we know? There are no new concepts, number one. Let's get that out there first. There's nothing but new in the sciences in the last 20 years at least. So there's no new conceptual information. What is really the key is how do you use what we've established we already know. So there's no new concepts. The concepts are the same. The difference in expertise is how a coach or a scientist takes the methods and the concepts that are out there and employs them in the most efficient way. That's really the key. So if you hear that, oh, there's this new concept, this new idea, you know right away that's not true. There's no research being done in the United States at all on anything new. And since the Soviet Union has fallen apart over 20 years ago, there's nothing new coming out from over there either. So I think this is something that everyone has to kind of be leery of anytime you hear that there's something new going on. I also would say, there's a couple other ideas where, you know, people will talk about things like energy system development, or they talk about prehab. This is an interesting concept. What's prehab? What does that mean? You know, every exercise, theoretically, is prehab. It's you know, kind of prevention of injury. As long as you're using the exercise correctly, with the right amount of intensity, you know, and volume, they all are preventive of injury to that particular joint. So it's kind of a misnomer as well. That makes no sense at all. You know, how would you train differently to prevent an injury? Secondly, energy system development. This idea has come out. It should be implicit in your training program. There's really, you don't train that separately. It's part of the whole deal. So I think that some of these ideas that you hear and lingo, they really make no sense, or otherwise they've gotten undue attention because they should just be an implicit part of your training protocol. So anyway, Doc, I appreciate you kind of clearing up this misconception and loose language and terminology that really doesn't have any real bearing or scientific validity. Before we wrap up, though, Jeff, I'd like to just give it back to you, too. See, does that kind of answer your questions, and did it beg any other questions for you?
No, that was great discussion, and definitely cleared up a lot of ideas and thoughts. And Doc, I appreciate the answers. And I'm just going to have to review your explosive plyometric books, which I highly recommend.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you want the most practical material on how to take plyometrics and use them effectively in a rational way, Explosive Plyometrics is easily the best book in that area because it's very user friendly. He explains when, where, why, and how also developing different exercises that employ plyometrics that you may not see everywhere else as well. So definitely an excellent buy. If that's, if you're wanting to employ plyometrics at the appropriate time, that book is hands down the best one that I've seen out there. And I think I've seen most of them. So anyway, Doc, do you have any parting thoughts?
I think that's it, Yosef. And maybe we can explore a couple of those concepts that you mentioned about the prehab. That was kind of intriguing. So that might be for down the road.
Yeah, yeah. I think maybe what we can do next week is we can throw out a couple terms that get kind of bandied about quite a bit and just kind of look at them with a little scrutiny and kind of see what they actually mean and how they're, you know, what their relation is to the whole training process. And, you know, I think that would be a great idea. We can kind of take a few different terms on and kind of just examine them a little bit more fully. So with that, guys, I appreciate your time as always. We'll look forward to getting back together again, and maybe we'll take this concept a little bit further. We're looking at some other terms and ideas next week. So thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you next week.
Be very good.
Thank you.